Hello everyone, and welcome to another Windows 7 session here at Channel 9. My name is Yohai Kiryati, I'm a technical evangelist, and with me today, Gavin. Gavin, please introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Gavin, and I'm a program manager working in the Windows division on the sensor and location platform, which is new for Windows 7. We talked about that in the last video. But for those of you that haven't seen that, we have a new platform in Windows 7 which provides native support for sensor and location devices. So it includes an API, a device driver interface, and developer tools.
Right. So this is another video in a series of Windows 7 sensor and location platform videos that we have. If you haven't seen the previous videos, we urge you to go in. We have the links attached to this post, so you can actually go in and see the previous video. So today we're going to talk about the Windows 7 sensor driver development, right?
Mm-hmm.
So before we actually start talking about driver development, let's just recap about what the sensor platform in 7 is.
Sure. So first we'll talk about what we mean by the term sensor, since the term sensor can have many meanings. Basically, we think of sensors as devices that report information about a physical phenomena or some other type of interaction. So a physical phenomena could be something like barometric pressure or the current lighting level incident on some service. Other interactions could be a user walking up to the PC, the proximity, the distance that the user is from the PC, or even scanning some type of tag like a barcode or an RFID tag, that kind of thing.
Right. So you can basically think of, sensor could be either physical devices or logical representation mm-hmm. of services, as long as they have the right drivers, which we'll see in a second how to write.
Right.
As long as they have the right drivers, they can be used in the Windows 7 sensor platform.
Right.
And the previous video actually walked through the APIs, show how to use the platform, how to use the sensor APIs, how to enumerate with device, get events, get information, get data report, and so on. Cool.
Yep.
So today we're going to actually talk about drivers, right?
Sure. Yeah, and you might be wondering, when do you need to write a sensor driver? So I thought I'd start out by talking about some of the most common scenarios. So Windows 7 sensor drivers are UMDF drivers, and if you're not familiar with UMDF, it's the User Mode Driver Framework. So these drivers run in a host process, which is essentially a Win32 application. It makes them easier to debug, easier to write. Code reuse can be a little bit easier to attain, and we have a bunch of really good samples.
And this is versus a kernel mode driver, right?
Correct.
It's right. Yeah. Runs in the kernel.
Exactly. So when you're mucking around in the executive, you can bring the machine down. It's harder to track memory leaks and to debug these drivers, that kind of
right.
thing.
If you touch kernel debugger, to actually debug them and so forth.
Exactly.
So when you're saying it's just hosted as an application, you can do any regular debugger.
Yep.
So Visual Studio will actually work just as usual for you.
Yep, and there's even special tips and tricks for automatically having a debugger break on start when the driver host process loads. So there's really quite a few ways that you can use developer tools and other debugging mechanisms to quickly and effectively step into your code when it loads, walk through that code, diagnose problems, things of that nature.
Right, and User Mode Driver Framework was introduced in Windows Vista,
mm-hmm.
so Windows 7 sensor location platform just take advantage of that.
Right.
Because it makes sense and it's a little bit more easier to write
yep.
it.
So to walk through the sensor driver development scenarios, if you're going to have a dedicated device driver for your sensor hardware, you could either add sensor functionality to an existing UMDF driver. Say you have a UMDF driver for a USB peripheral, for instance, and you're adding support for a temperature sensor or an accelerometer or something like that. Basically, you would take your existing UMDF driver and you would perform the proper code hookups using the outgoing and incoming interfaces that we'll talk about in order to expose your hardware and to support the interactions that your hardware implements.
Right.
So start off with an existing driver or implement a UMDF driver for your sensor hardware from scratch. We've got some really good samples that can get you up to speed quickly. We have basically a skeleton sample in the WDK. You can take that and use it as a starting point. We also have our Windows 7 sensor development kits that you have a USB HID protocol implementation all of the driver source code is available for that implementation as well. So we've got a 3D accelerometer, a light sensor, and capacitive touch sensors as well for that particular implementation.
Right, and again, we'll add the links to the downloads of that from codemsdn.com.
Right. So those would be driver development scenarios for hardware that's directly enumerable, with where your driver would load when the hardware is enumerated. There's another set of driver development scenarios which correspond to our logical sensor framework. The logical sensor framework allows driver instances to be loaded even when there is no directly enumerable hardware present.
So it will allow you basically to write virtual sensors.
Yeah. There's two primary scenarios there. The first would be if you're writing a bridge driver implementation. So let's say, for instance, you have an existing kernel mode driver or user mode driver and vertical solution built out for your sensor hardware. You could basically, if you have an API, for instance, implement your Windows 7 sensor driver, have that sensor driver talk directly to an API or some other programming mechanism, and then basically take that functionality and expose it on Windows 7. Of course, long term, you'd want to re-architect your solution such that it had one driver implemented to support that functionality.
Of course.
But those are the basic scenarios. The other final scenario is supporting a software sensor. Like if you have a location sensor that uses IP lookup to determine location, that would be an example of a sensor that does not have directly enumerable hardware and implements a software-based sensing solution. So you'd use the logical sensor framework and a Windows 7 driver implementation in combination to support that particular scenario.
Right, and we'll see some examples shortly.
Yep.
Cool. So, so let's exactly see what's the different components within the different sensor
the
framework.
So this is going to be similar to what we talked about in the last video. I just want to cover this again really quick for those that didn't see that. We start at the bottom with the sensor hardware. Now, this could really be anything. It could be a logical sensor, software-based solution. It could be an onboard sensor. It could be a USB peripheral. It doesn't really matter. What does matter is that your driver gets loaded and that your driver implements the sensor class extension-based device driver interface. So as we'll see later in this talk, that basically entails using the iSensor class extension interface and implementing a callback interface. When you integrate with the sensor class extension, your hardware is exposed via the sensor API to software clients that discover the sensor either based on enter and leave events or by querying for that particular type of sensor.
Right. So once you detect it through the sensor API, you can actually go and talk with the device.
Exactly. So here we'll show a couple applications that can simultaneously access the sensor hardware. It's a concurrent access model, which is good. There is a permissions mechanism where sensors are disabled by default on Windows because they can expose personally identifiable and other sensitive information.
Right.
OEMs can pre-enable sensors. So in the case of light sensors, for instance, that don't expose any sensitive information, those would typically be pre-enabled by the OEM, and you wouldn't have to worry about prompting the user to give permissions or anything like that. Final thing I want to mention is that we have complete reference and conceptual documentation, tools and samples for the sensor API and for our location API. So whether you're writing a sensor driver or an application, you've got a complete set of tools and resources that can help you get up to speed quickly.
Cool. And as we said, we have the previous videos that are listed along this post, and with these videos we have links for all the content that Gavin is talking here about. Excellent.
So let's get into some driver topics then, shall we?
Please, let's see how we can actually write a driver.
Okay, so I mentioned the sensor class extension. Essentially, the sensor class extension is a driver utility library. What we've done is we've put the security-related code and other what would be redundant code in every driver implementation, kind of abstracted and refactored that into this sensor class extension, which is an inproc com DLL that's inbox in Windows 7, just like the sensor API, essentially. The sensor class extension is used by your driver for outgoing calls. So when your device is enumerated, you initialize this class extension. This triggers a set of callbacks to basically enumerate the individual sensors or sensor that your device implements support for. And you also use the iSensor class extension interface for other outgoing calls, like raising events and handling cleanup when an unexpected situation is encountered, that kind of thing.
Right. And we do have some additional callbacks coming in, right, through the iSensor extension class.
Yes. So the iSensor class extension is where you make outgoing calls, and the iSensor driver interface is the interface that's implemented by your sensor driver. So if we go back to one of the scenarios that we talked about where you have an existing UMDF driver implementation, yes, for a USB peripheral, for instance, you would basically add support in your on-prepare hardware call, which is a standard UMDF call that's raised when your hardware is enumerated. In that on-prepare hardware call, you would co-create one of these iSensor class extension objects. It's the root co-creatable object for the DDI for sensors, and you would then call the initialize method. That would trigger a bunch of callbacks on your iSensor driver implementation initially to establish which sensors are supported by your hardware, what their properties are, that kind of thing.
Cool. And in the when I use the sensor, right, when I register for an event or I want to get specific information, specific mm-hmm. data read from the driver, again, I go through these
exactly.
channel to go to the callback to the sensor driver implementation.
Yep. Anything incoming is serviced on these callback methods, basically. And then the last part, of course, is the actual sensor functionality, which is really up to your driver to implement. Could be over the HID protocol, could be an IP-based sensor, could be an ACPI-based sensor. It's really arbitrary. Whatever UMDF methods and mechanisms you want to use to implement support for that protocol, or if you even want to call into a kernel mode driver that's lower in the stack, that type of functionality is implemented by your driver in its own proprietary way.
Right. As long as you keep the API, it's going to keep the, sorry, the iSensor drivers and the iSensor class extension
yep.
Interfaces implemented correctly.
Yep.
We can hook
right.
up into you.
So the lower part is hooking directly up to your hardware. The upper part is hooking up to the sensor API.
Right.
So the data can flow essentially directly from your hardware all the way up to software clients that are registered to receive data notifications or make incoming calls, synchronous access for data, for instance, that kind of thing.
Excellent. So what are the sequence of events that happen at runtime?
So if we look at the flow of data, essentially, or the different types of events that occur, again here we have our sensor driver host process, and within that process, we've implemented support for the underlying transport, talking to a HID sensor or an IP sensor, whatever that type of hardware interface looks like. What we're going to be doing in our driver, in a typical UMDF driver, is handling incoming ioctls in the process IO control method.
Which ioctl stands for?
IO control. So input output control code.
Yep.
And these ioctls are raw. So some of the ioctls that are incoming into our UMDF driver implementation need to be forwarded on to the sensor class extension because they're meaningful to the implementation, which relies on WPD, or Windows Portable Devices. Some of these constructs and ioctls and basically object hierarchy is being maintained. So when those WPD ioctls are sent to our driver, we forward those to the sensor class extension. And we'll talk more about the specific methodology for that transaction when we deep dive on the iSensor class extension interface. So our sensor class extension instance receives these WPD ioctls. It maintains this WPD object hierarchy under the covers and does the right things to maintain the integrity and structure of the data, that kind of thing. Callbacks, as we mentioned, are raised when incoming requests come from client applications. So if a client application wants to obtain the value for a particular property, a sensor property is metadata that describes the sensor essentially, that gets translated to an iSensor driver callback method invocation. So our driver process callback gets called, and we supply the data and return that to the calling application. So if data or properties are required by the application or by the sensor platform, those callbacks get raised, and our code in our UMDF driver handles those transactions. So What does a sensor look like exactly? I've talked a little bit about some of the sort of core data structures and concepts. I wanted to illustrate that with this diagram. Basically, it boils down to three things. Sensors have properties, which are metadata that describes the sensor. Sensors have data fields, which correspond to individual readings that the sensors take. So you could have one for temperature, one for barometric pressure, one for wind speed, for instance. Those would all be individual data fields, because whenever we raise a data event and send a data report, it will have individual values for essentially those variables in the data report.
Right. So basically, with the API, you can actually go and read every field, right?
Exactly.
Every data field. So yep. Here's a question. So when I go and ask for like the model, the serial number mm-hmm. of that driver, mm-hmm. of that sensor, it goes to the central extension class, get a callback to the iSensor driver, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which in return the manufacturer or type or
yep.
or serial number or whatever.
Yep.
Does the iSensor or the sensor class extension persist any of the information? Like any of the static information, type or manufacturer number or anything like that?
No, that information is basically cached by the application client if it needs to keep track of that kind of data and use it in an ongoing manner. Or, of course, the application can make another property
request.
Fetch
right.
in order to get that data again if it's not persistent.
Sure. So basically the iSensor class is a bridge is the right word, but it's just a tunnel through which you
yeah.
can call for the specific
mm-hmm.
iSensor driver implementation and get
right.
any information that you want, like data fields,
right.
events, or any static information about the drivers.
Some of the information can be cached by the sensor platform, some of the lower level data, like the persistent unique ID, things like that, but you can't really rely on the platform caching
right.
that data. It's up to you, basically, to serve up that data when it's requested.
But it's for your internal implementation.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Yep.
It's just to follow up whatever happened.
Right.
Cool.
Correct. Yep. So the final thing are events. So there are a set of standard events, like when data is updated or when state changes, things like that. Any of these three types of data and interactions can be fully extended by third parties as well. So you have standard event IDs that are defined in the platform. You can define your own proprietary IDs, you can define your own proprietary data fields and properties as well. So if you want to have your own type of sensor or have your sensor fall under your own type of category, what you would do is define those specific definitions in a header file that's specific to your third party company or whatever, and then developers could use those definitions when they go to query sensors.
Right, but eventually they're all discoverable through the API. So
correct.
You can go in and ask for all the types that are
yep.
registered right now and get this whatever type you have and enumerate through that and get all the data fields that support.
Right.
Events.
If you know what you're looking for based on
right.
definitions either in the sensor platform or from third party header files, for instance.
You can do it directly.
You can get it straight through the
right.
through the API. Yep.
Cool.
So this is what a sensor really looks like at a high level. Another important thing that I wanted to talk about is the behavior of your sensor driver when it comes to tracking what application clients are connected to your sensor and optimizing the flow of data.
Right. So just before that, mm-hmm. in this slide, we see that there are three different applications,
mm-hmm.
right, requesting for data from the same hardware, basically,
right.
or from the same driver in
right.
our case, and it's all concurrent. So why is this concurrency important? What's the big difference from the Windows 7 sensor platform enables versus the previous solution that we had?
So if we take the location case, on Windows Vista and prior operating systems, location devices are typically exposed as virtual COM ports. And COM ports have a few shortcomings, one of which is a lack of a permissions model. So your location is sensitive information, any application can come along. Another key problem that you run into is exclusive application access. So only one application, maybe it's Streets and Trips, connecting to a GPS puck, for instance, can have access to that particular location device and the corresponding data. If I had a weather gadget that was location aware or some other application and navigation or points of interest application, it wouldn't be able to access that device. So it's a pretty severe limitation. There's also, you know, the need to know about proprietary data formats like the NMEA standard for reporting data, that kind of thing. So now in Windows 7, we've addressed that by implementing this concurrent application access model. And even if an application doesn't have permissions to access the data coming from a sensor, it can discover that sensor and query properties to determine if that sensor is of interest. And if it is, the application can call a method to request permissions.
Right. A long time, other applications can still continue and use and consume data from that sensors.
So the important thing for a driver developer to know about this is that if your sensor exposes itself under a particular category and is of a particular type, it's really the device that the user is giving permissions for, per device, per user account. So if your device appears to be harmless but also includes support for sensor types that expose personally identifiable information, that kind of inconsistency would be bad because it could have the user could end up inadvertently giving permissions to hardware and data that user wanted to control more tightly.
Right. So it's best just to separate between those two definitions as far as how you present it to the user.
Yep.
So going back to the slide, so we have several applications here that are asking for the same information or for information from the driver, from the sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And each one can, as we've seen in the previous in your previous videos, you have the API that you actually define what is the frequency of updates.
Right. And so this is for asynchronous data access. You can either request data in a synchronous manner, or you can register for data updates via the on data updated event. And when one or more applications are accessing data in an asynchronous manner, it's important to track the application's desired reporting interval and other properties of interest so that the frequency and flow of data can be optimized. So from a power perspective and from a performance perspective, we really want to send data updates to applications only when necessary. Otherwise, we're just waking the client application process when we don't really need to.
Right.
So ideally, what we want to do is even push that control down to the hardware level. In other words, if applications only need access to data every minute, you know, we can put our device into a low power state for 59 seconds or whatever that turns out to be,
right.
Power it back up, fetch some data, and then trigger a data updated event. So here we've got three different applications, and they have each set the current report interval. So when an application sets the current report interval, it's really requesting that data be sent at least as frequently as whatever the period is that they've set that value to in milliseconds. So here we've got one application that needs data every 100 milliseconds, another that needs it every half second, and a third that needs it every second. And in order, what we want to do basically in our driver is go with the slowest update frequency that satisfies the most sensitive client request. So in this case, it's 100 milliseconds.
Right.
So every tenth of a second, we're going to send new data if we have new data. And it's a little bit more complicated than that. I'll talk about a couple other considerations in the next slide. But it's just important to know that each application, when it connects to the sensor or when it subscribes to events, that ends up raising an event to the sensor driver so that it can handle the tracking of all of these preferences, essentially from an application perspective.
So here is the frequency that you're actually tracking the information.
Mm-hmm.
What other parameters do you need to consider when you're writing the driver?
So the other thing that we want to look at most fundamentally is how much of a change in the measured phenomena should trigger a data updated event. And we can actually combine these two concepts to further optimize the amount of resource consumption and power overhead that we're inducing here. So if we have this property called change sensitivity,
right.
And let's say we've got a light intensity that we are providing for applications, we can say that if the current lighting intensity changes by more than 5%, then the application wants to know. And if the application said, I need to know every 100 milliseconds, what we can basically do is take the union of those two parameters and say, if we've sustained a lighting change of more than 5% f- for more than 100 milliseconds, then we're going to raise the data updated event.
And when you say we can take a union, basically it's a person who writes the drivers, right?
Exactly.
So you can do an unlinear curve of changes per parameters or whatever information that you are requested for. And you can actually custom data per application, well, per sensor, basically, if you want to do it.
Exactly.
So is there a way for in the API to try to define that kind of curve about what's the sensitivity that you are wishing to get?
Well, the relationship of the sensitivity to the measured phenomena varies per data field. So for something like acceleration, which is linear, the change sensitivity is measured in the same units as the acceleration, which is G.
Okay.
But lighting is nonlinear. Right. So lux values, which is lumens per square meter, in terms of human eye perception, vary with the log base 10 of the actual lux value. So we express the change sensitivity in percentage, and that is linear with respect to human perception. So if you read the API documentation, you can learn more about the specific data fields and what their specific change sensitivities should map to.
Right, and as a developer, you can actually change the sensitivity or the change sensitivity report interval, which basically said you could change the percentage or whatever information you want as much to be notified when a change happened.
Right, and it's really up to your driver implementation in terms of how to best optimize that behavior.
Okay.
Oh, one more thing. So for location sensors, there's this notion of desired accuracy.
Yes.
And that's another parameter that you can use to further optimize for power and performance. So if we've only got applications that need accuracy within 10 kilometers, we can power down the GPS device and just use our software service, for instance.
But basically, the sensor location desired accuracy is built upon the current report, the sensitivity or the error report within the H sensor, right?
Well, it's more of a cue from the application that can help the driver implement proper behavior.
Okay.
So, if an application needs really precise information, you know, the device that may translate to the device being in a higher power state for more time.
So it makes sense. So I hear what you're saying that as you're writing your user mode driver, it's pretty much your responsibility to optimize it for power consumption and CPU cycles to make it a good citizen within Windows 7. Do we provide any tools to test that or support that?
Basically, it's really the documentation and code samples that give a generalized sort of framework and conceptual to implementation type of mapping, you know, in terms of what a driver implementation should look like in terms of power consumption and resource utilization.
Right. And use common sense. Don't bang up an updated event of data when you don't need to or if there's no application asking for that and so forth.
It's mostly about what we've already talked about, which is actively managing different client application preferences for report interval and for change sensitivity.
Cool. So what else do we have to consider?
Well, that's it for the high-level overview. I think in the next video, maybe we can get further in terms of a deep dive into the sensor class extension and iSensor driver interfaces and look at specifically how those interfaces are used and implemented.
Right. For those of you who haven't lost us yet, the next video will provide this great opportunity to dive into the driver API and see the specific calls and exactly how to write a Windows 7 sensor platform driver. So stay tuned for additional Windows 7 videos here on Channel 9.